Okay. So as I say, we'll do a sicha of the Rebbe on Pesach, which comes with a certain fundamental theme about how Yetzias Mitzrayim actually works. And if we have time, we'll connect it with similar themes that appear in the talks. So what I want to do is, I'm not going to do everything inside because we'll never finish. So we'll do certain parts inside and I'll tell you certain parts outside. Let's have a look at the first part. It was originally printed, it's an edited sicha of the Rebbe. It was really printed in Yiddish, but they translated into Lashon Kodesh. All right, so he says like this. Hachag, that's number one, right on page one. Hachag hazeh, sorry, hachag nikro b'shloisha shemus v'tayri. You know that the Pesach is called by three names, right? Haso, b'tor aleph, b'tor shebichsav, in the written Torah, nikro chag ha-matzis, it's called chag ha-matzis, the festival of matzis, right? You know that, by the way. It's not called Pesach in the Torah, right? The only reference to Pesach in the Torah is the Korban Pesach that was brought on the 14th of Nisan, Erev Pesach, right? So in fact, Pesach in the Torah doesn't refer to Pesach at all. It refers to the Korban Pesach or Erev Pesach, yeah? Okay, that's number one, Chag HaMatzis. Beis, secondly, what developed later is B'nusach HaTfilah, when the Chazal made the format of davening. Nikba lehoisiv, so was established to add another term, which is Chag HaMatzis Hazeh Zman Cheiruseinu. Right, in the davening we refer to it as Chag HaMatzis, but then we say it's Zman Cheiruseinu, it's time of our freedom. Right? And Gimel, the third is B'loshen Razal, in the language of Chazal, Chayin Gam B'loshen many other, also the way language of many people talk, Nikroim Kol Shiva Shmoy Nasiyam, all 7 or 8 days, Nikro B'Shem Chag Pesach. It's called the Festival of Pesach. In fact, we all call it Pesach, right? That's how we do it. So before we go into what he's going to say here, just a little cute thing. It's a famous idea. Maybe some of you know it already, but the Baditch of Erov said, Hakam Hashem calls it Chag HaMatzis, and we call it Chala Pesach. Have you heard this idea? So in Gemara Brachos, it says, that whatever principle, whatever mitzvahs we keep, Hashem also keeps the mitzvahs, right? Obviously not in the physical form, but in some spiritual ideas. So it says in Gemara Brachos, Tfilin demore olma maksibuhu. What's written in Hashem's tefillin? Yeah? So what's the question? Because obviously in our tefillin we know what's written, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Right? That's fine. But what's written in Hashem's tefillin? So Hashem's tefillin is written, Mi ka'amcha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. Who is like your nation, Yisrael, one nation on earth, right? In other words, what do? We praise Hashem and Hashem praises us. That's the relationship, right? So similarly, he said, Hashem calls the Yontav Chag HaMatzis. Why? That's praising the Jewish people. How so? That we had a munah, we followed blindly, we rushed out of Mitzrayim the way Hashem told us to, we baked matzahs in a hurry so it wouldn't rise, and we went, not knowing even where we're going. Amazing shvach. And in fact, later on in Tanakh, Hashem praises us for this. It's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu which we say on Rosh Hashanah davening. Koy Omar Hashem, Hashem said, Lechtaich Achar HaMidbar, you guys just followed me in the Midbar. Right? In a uninhabited land, you didn't know where you were going. It's a beautiful thing, yeah? Okay. That's what Hashem does. That's what he calls the Chag HaMatzis. We, however, we call it Chag HaPesach. Because what's Pesach? Pesach is referring to how Hashem skipped over the houses that were Jewish and didn't kill the firstborns of the Jewish people and saved us and redeemed us. So the word Pesach is referring to how Hashem skipped over and saved us. That's why we're praising Hashem. So Hashem praises us and we praise Hashem. Okay. But the Rebbe takes a different take over here and says that all three names are obviously relevant and it must mean something. And that's what he says now in the next paragraph. He says like this. Yesh loymar. We can say the following. Shebechag yesh nekudu klolis. Right? This is very typical of the Rebbe. The Rebbe Bechlal, just to give you a bit of background to this, held that Torah says that the name of something represents the essence of the thing. Right? Now, you know, the Rebbe's emunah in Torah was so unbelievably extreme that, like, if Torah says something, then it's just the way it is every time. This is just what it is, right? So if we know that the name represents, what Shemta says the name represents the essence of things, so but the Rebbe was everything like that. And very many sikhs, for example, are built on the names of parshas. Like, why is a parsha called this name? Like, for example, I'll give you a quick example. So one of the names of the parshas is Chayasara, right? Which means life of sorrow. Now, on a simple level, most people tell you, like, what's the big deal? It's one of the first words of the parasha. That's it. The Rebbe says, no, it can be. If it's the name of the parasha, it means it represents the essence of the parasha. So when it comes to Chayei Sarah, for example, we have this problem that the word Chayei Sarah means the life of Sarah. Everything in the parasha is about the death of Sarah. It's about what happened after Sarah was alive. Starting with the death of Sarah, then the fact that that Yitzchak was still unmarried and he had to go send a wife, but his mother wasn't there. And then afterwards, Yavram remarried Hagar because Sarah had died. Right? So there's a whole, I'm not going to go through the whole sikha now, but you see how. And then the Rebbe goes to each thing and says, no, it really represents the essence of a life, and so on and so forth. And that's why the parasha is called Chayei Sarah, right? So same thing over here. If we have three names of Pesach, it's got to be...
Isn't it also the name of the person they say?
No, it starts with the name of the person. Correct. But the Chidur, in fact, the Gemara says, Rav Meir HaMedayik B'Shmo, Rav Meir would look at a person and then ask the person's name and could tell to work out the whole person from the name. Interesting thing, right? Yeah. That's got to do because the Alter Rebbe in Tanya also says that the letters of the name are the letters through which Hashem sends His chayis, His energy to the person and so on. Okay, separate issue. So here the chiddush is not only a name of a person. That's the word here. Not only name of a person, but name of anything. So we have a yontif with a name, and for somehow it evolves that it has more than one name. It must mean something, right? So the Rebbe says yesh nekuda klalis v'toichen ikri. There's got to be a general point and a primary content of a toichan akuduzu yeshnam shloish anyanim. In other words, like this, Pesach has a central theme, and that central theme expresses itself in three stages. Shaboyim bebitui, which are then expressed mishloish hashemus elu in these three names. I think just the whole approach is fascinating. Before you even get to the explanation, like, right? You have three names. We call it Pesach. That's what evolved. No. Yontif's got three names. It means that the Yontif obviously stands for one essential point, and that point must express itself in three stages. That's why there's three names. Now he says even more. And therefore, and we also know that because the order in Torah is also as a lesson, everything that comes in a particular order has a lesson. For example, we know that in Chumash, the order is not chronological necessarily. But there's an order. What comes first, comes first. What comes second, there's a reason for it. Often the reason is not historic, because we know that we have a rule. There's no chronological order. The Torah is not a history book. So therefore, the prayer often puts things out of order. But there's still a lesson why it's in a particular order, right? Therefore, the same thing we have to say, that Shlesha Hashem is these three names. V'inyonim v'iroi shalem, and the lessons we learn from them, boim l'seidah chashivusom, come in order of the importance. In other words, whatever we're going to explain, obviously first you need the concept of Chag HaMatzos, because that's what the Torah calls the answer. You must have this idea of Chag HaMatzos, whatever that represents. Hashem, the Torah Shebichsav, which is the name that the Torah Shebichsav gives. Achrei Kein, afterwards you need to have the idea of Zman Cheiruseinu, right? Shu Marbeah Shtov HaChomi, which is the format that the rabbis made in terms of the bracha, the Anshek Nesag Doila L'Omre B'Tzvila. And then you must have this Indian, then you must reach the Madrega of Achar Kein, Chag HaPesach, Shetiskabel, B'Loshon Razal, B'Loshon Yod. Then you have the word Pesach, which has been accepted. It's not in the Chumash, it's not even in Chazal, but not in Chazal's official format of Tefillah, but it was accepted by Chazal at a later stage and became the regular description that people use to call the Yontif. So every one of these names must represent the central theme of Pesach, and in that order. Whatever it represents has to be in that order. Yep? Okay. What is the central theme of Pesach? So look at this. What, you want a pen? I thought you were looking for something. No? Okay, good.
Just got distracted for a second.
Okay. So in Pesach, like this. Zman Yitzias Mitzrayim, the time of going out of Egypt, who, as explained in the prophecy of Yecheskel, is Leidas Am Yisrael, is the birth of the Jewish people. Right? That's what Pesach is, when we were born. Now, what does that mean? The Hatam Lazeh, the reason for this, she Yitzias Mitzrayim Metu'eres B'Lashon Leida. The reason that we call Yitzias Mitzrayim in the expression of birth, what does it mean we became a nation? Not because we became a nation then. That you could say even with regard to other nations, lahavdil. Ella. So, in other words, there's probably anniversaries of lots of people that became a people of some sort. It's much deeper than that. Ella mipnei shekasher nasu la'am. It's because when we became a nation, hafchu b'nei Yisrael metzius chadosha. We became a new entity, a new identity, a new entity. As he explains, I'm not going to go through the whole thing now. Explains that the purpose of going out of Mitzrayim was matan Torah. As Hashem said at the burning bush, when you take the nation out of Mitzrayim, they're going to serve me in this mountain. In other words, we didn't just become a people. We became a people of Torah. We became a people that are connected to Hashem. We became a new Mitzvah. We know also, by the way, the Gemara in Yevamah says that at Matan Torah, we were like Geirim. We were like, right? We were like converts. Which started, it's one process, by the way. It's one process. It's one experience from Pesach till Shavuos is one journey, right? I was telling on a Thursday morning, I was telling a bunch of people that it's really, I've tried to do stuff sometimes on Shavuos, because Shavuos, I've forgotten Yontif, unfortunately. What people don't realize, actually, that Shavuos is the completion of Pesach, right? The whole Pesach was to get to Shavuos. It was a process of Geirus, the Gemara says. It's a process of, in fact, many of the laws, many of the halachas of Geirus, we learn from Matan Torah. It's Yitzias Mitzrayim, Matan Torah, Pesach and Shavuos. Now, Ger, a person converts, like a new thing, a new person. The Gemara says, Gerishin is Gair, a Ger that converted, Kekotan Shalai, like a child that was born. A new entity. Okay. So how do we do this? Now, still like this, go to Gimel, on the same page, where is this Gimel? The Rebbe explains the process, which Chassidus explains the following. Ho'inyon yuvan bedugme, we can understand this by giving an example. Mehaseder shaboy rav loymed in talmid. Dvar seichel kozeh, shatalmid mitzad atzmo yaladeh haseichel lo ishi shaloy, eino yochel hagilaze. We need to understand the process of how a rav, many analogies given in Chassidus are from a teacher and a student. How a rav teaches a talmid, but if he teaches a Talmud something that's so intellectual and something that's so new and great and deep, that is something that the Talmud, that student on their own, with their own seichel, could never reach it. Okay? So just, that's an important point to understand. Whenever Chassidus gives an example of a Rav and a Talmud, we're not talking about just someone who, you know, has a couple of pages extra, he knows a bit more than the students he's teaching, or research something which, in theory, they could also research, but now he's just researching and giving it over, right? When we talk about the mushal of a Rav and a Talmud, we're talking about a Rav who there's a huge gap. There's like an infinite, you can't say infinite with people, but there's like a sort of an infinite gap between the Rav and the Talmud. Right? You know, I say this because like we many like things about Tzimtzum, I think I've shared this before, like the Tzimtzum we learn from Rav and Talmud, all these things, right? We learn from Rav and Talmud. So, Rav and Talmud, a great Rav is teaching a Talmud something new, something that the Talmud on their own cannot reach. Chiddush, right? Like when I think of this, I think like of going to for bringing to the Rebbe, for example, right? I mean, the Rebbe would reveal things that no one would be able to come to on their own. It was new stuff, right? It was new concepts, new depth of ideas that you had to be ready to work hard to understand, right? The point was eventually you understand it. Maybe you don't understand it fully at the beginning, but maybe eventually you did it. We'll soon see as he describes it over here. Okay. He said like this. How does it work? Oh, see, it's like this. Let's just see, he defines it, right? So he couldn't come to it with his seichel. Einu yochel lagiel, the third line, he cannot come to it on his own. And therefore, by the Talmud, it's a completely new idea. And he adds in brackets, says, not because it's new, because he never heard it before, right? Most times when we go to learn by someone, often that's the case. We're just learning something we never heard before, but we could, in theory, have understood it before, right? But no, he's saying, Ele mishum shula maila migedra secha shla Talmud. It's a Talmud learning by a Rav, something that really is beyond the properties and the abilities of the seichel, the intellect of the Talmud, the way it is now. Okay? So we'll see that it goes in three stages, which will become the three stages of Pesach in a second. I mean, a few minutes, yeah? So he says like this, L'choy l'roish, we have to understand each stage. L'choy l'roish, first of all, Nidreshes mehatalmid tunua shel bitul. First of all, the Talmud has to have bitul. like completely, he has to surrender to the Rav. At least, when I say surrender, it's not surrender to Rav as a slave. We're talking about surrender to Rav in this context, talking about, right now we're talking about intellectual relationship, but it's all relationships like that, right? It's intellectual, it's surrender intellectually, right? K'maymer Chazal, like Chazal tell us, Shetalmid Chacham Sheyoshiv Vnei Rabbi, a Torah scholar that sits in front of his teacher, Tzorachlius B'matziv Shel Sifsoisiv Noitveis Mor, has to be in a situation that, like, he's almost trembling. Merirus Machmas Emo, like he's like in awe. He shuts down. He's nothing. He's like almost blown. He's overwhelmed by the presence of the Rav. Why? Why is that? He explains. Ki al yedei hakoiches, in the brackets, right? Ki al yedei hakoiches vehaseichel shaloi einenu yochel lekabel seichel chadosh hanayel memetziyah shaloi. Because if he thinks the way he normally thinks, if he goes into the shir and he's trying to operate with his normal ways of thinking, he's not going to understand what the teacher is saying. The teacher is about to teach him something which is beyond it, right? So therefore, how do you do it? V'dafke bittel. It has to be through the process of bittel, the process of surrender, negation. Loi metzias, that is nothing. Who cleaves there, then he becomes a receptacle to be able to absorb a little bit of what the rabbi is saying. V'al delech, Rosh HaChazal, like the Chazal say in the Gemara, that kli reikon machzik. The Chazal says, it says that a cup that is full can't hold anything anew. A cup that is empty can hold something new, right? So one of the ways the Chassidus explains is what it means. If you come to some, if you want to learn something new, if you want to learn a completely new idea, but you come with all your preconceived ideas, in other words, your cup is full, it won't hold anything. It's full. It's full of you. So it won't be able to absorb something that's not you. So, klireikon, an empty cup, you empty yourself out. I'm not thinking. I've shut down. Shut down, I mean I'm listening, but I've left everything about me and my way of thinking behind. This is a little bit like I explained to you in Tanya, if you remember, about the difference between Chochmah and Bina. Right? And if you remember, I told you that Chochmah is called Koyach Ma. It's one of the faculties, but it's Ma. It's not really a faculty. Why? Because Chochmah is really understanding a truth that's beyond you, something new. That's why I explained to you that Chochmah is how the concept grabs you, as Bina is how you grab the concept, right? Remember that? Same idea. Chochmah means I'm trying to understand the solution to this problem, but I'm not trying to work it out. I'm actually open to something new. I'm trying to work out something that's beyond me. And then suddenly it takes hold of me. Oh, I get it. There's a moment of clarity. I don't understand it yet, but I chop it. I see it. I see that's the nukud. That's the point. To do that, you have to be bottle, you have to surrender. Because if you come with you, then you doesn't let something else that's not you into it. Right? Okay. So that's the first stage of how Talmud learns by Rav. Now I want to just point out that the Rebbe, I'm not going to do it inside, so I'll point it out now. Later on, the Rebbe says that the same thing where we find in Gemara that the way you relate to a Talmud, where a teacher like Talmud should be, it says smol doicher, the left hand must push away, and the right hand must bring close, right? Now, which means that in a relationship, really the ultimate is closeness and the ultimate is connection, but that has to be sometimes we have to be firm. Teacher has to be firm. It has to be the left hand. Left hand is gevura. Now, it's also the weaker hand, which is why we say that the main thing is love, but that's why it has to be stronger. But the order, it says, the order is smol doicher. First has to be the left. Because if a Talmud, even in a regular teacher, if the Talmud walks the classroom and he's equal to the Rebbe, then there's no point in being there. You've come to surrender. That's how you can learn. It's not just a discipline issue, it's a conceptual issue. You're coming here like a smiler, like you know already what I'm going to teach you, so then you don't belong here. There's no point in you being here. Right? Now, the Rebbe asked a question on this, actually, because we said order in Torah is also order, so it sees left comes first, right? You got to first, the Talmud has to be in awe of the Rav. Otherwise, they can't really learn, correct? So he asked a question on that, because the Gemara actually says something that seems the opposite. There's a Gemara that says that the Rebbe, before he was give a shir, he was crack a joke. Why did he crack a joke? Because not crack a joke. He would say something light, right? lighten up the mood, people chuckle a bit, and when people are besimcha, they chuckle, their mind is open, it's more open to learn. So at least seems like the opposite, right? He says no. And the Rebbe, by the way, transfers this to education in general, and it's good for parenting, all these things, right? There is a prerequisite culture of love, of chesed. That's like Rebbe created a nice culture. But he hasn't started the shiur yet. That's before the shiur. Because there has to be that general relationship between the Rav and the Talmud, that the Talmud wants to come learn with this Rav, the Rav wants to teach the Talmud. There has to be an openness, a closeness, a connection, and so on. But that's not what the Gemara says, that it should be the left pushes away and the hand and the right hand brings forward, brings close. That's once the education begins. So that's be a general readiness to enter into the relationship. Okay, that's something else. But once the relationship starts, once the Talmud is engaged in the shir, the first thing is to be shut down. I'll give you a little bit of an example of this. Just, you know, I think we spoke, I don't know if we spoke about this last time, but you know, by the Rebbe, for example, there was Rabbi Yol Khan, was a very famous chassid, right? And he was the chief chayzer, he was the chief repeater of what the Rebbe would say. He was a very, very deep thinker. And but he also had amazing memory. So he would stand by the Rebbe's farbring on the Shabbos, and he would remember everything, right? Now, when he would give a shir in the Kutei Sichas, right? If you give a shir in the Rebbe's Sicha, he would sometimes give a shir, he would ask questions, he would try to understand, contrast it, right? But the reason he was able to give it over so well, was because when he was there, and this is how you have to tell me, right? That's how you really learn from it. That's how you have to listen to a sikha of the Rebbe. When they would listen, they would just stand there, like just hear what the Rebbe was saying. Not think about, oh, this makes sense. Do I understand? No, just absorb it. Just complete surrender. Later you process it, you start to understand, you can ask questions, but when you hear it, surrender. Right? Otherwise, you bring too much of you there, and you won't get it. Okay, so that's step one. Then, if the last two lines on the page says "abal achakach," but afterwards, "muchrach la talmid lishtadl lahasig asasvar." But then the goal is that the talmid, the disciple, has to understand the concept. Hi, it's your father. Sorry.
I saw
you struck out. Right? In other words, like this. The first stage of the Talmud is, he's not trying to understand, he's just trying to absorb it. Meaning, obviously he's trying to listen to what's being said, otherwise, but he's not trying to analyze it, or understand it, or comprehend it, or internalize it, he's just getting it. Then, when the Talmud goes away, now the Talmud has to repeat it and start to understand using the Talmud seichel. Right? So again, you hear a talk from a big Rav, now it's total bittle. Just, what is he saying? Now I go away and I try to break it down. It's a little bit like Chochmah and Binah in a way, right? I try to understand it, I try to process it. And inevitably, when I process it, I might actually end diluting a little bit, because I'm going to process it the way I need to understand, the way I can understand it, right? And there can be two people, right, who can learn, again, going back to the example of the Rebbe's, should we turn off the ecstasy? Yeah, close it. I'll do it. Close it. So there can be two chassidim listening to the same sikha. They're both with total bittle. And they're both listening to the same thing. After they both go away and study it, the one's going to understand a lot deeper than the other. The same sikha. Because each one now is using their ability. Right? And both of them are going to understand it at a very deep level, but probably not at the level the way it was delivered, because that belongs to a different world. But that's what it's supposed to be. You're supposed to understand it, because you're supposed to use your brain. Right? That's what he says. After the Talmud has to then understand, grasp, not just accept it, but grasp the logic. And for that, you have to use who you are. You have to bring back the you. You have to use your brain to understand it. Okay. Just skip the brackets on page 2. But he says, "V'tachli salimut." But the ultimate of learning, he says, "Sof sof yia a talmud yia koi inish adaita derabe." Tachlis will be, and he's using a phrase that comes from the Gemara. I've forgotten who said it in the Gemara, but one of the great rabbis of the Gemara said the following: that he was a talmud of a certain great rebbe, a great tana of the Gemara, whatever the Mishnah. And he said that after 40 years, he finally understood the depth of what his teacher taught him. He kept on learning it, he kept trying to understand it, and eventually he got to understand it the way the teacher understood it. Understand? So, that's the tachlis. So again, tachlis alimunusha sof sof, that eventually ha talmud yokoi inish daita rebbe, that the talmud should grasp really what the rebbe meant. And therefore, afa pishum atzovei ko'eis adayin einu begeder sheyiyye lehovenes daita rebbe. Even though right now he's not shy to that. Even though he grasps it, and he grasps it at the deepest level that he possibly can, but he's not getting to the depth of the way the rebbe meant it only after many years. That's what eventually happens. So eventually he understands it, and all goes like this. Step one, he accepts it, because he surrenders. He accepts it. Step two, he understands it. But when he understands it, he's understanding with his ability to understand, which is much lower than the... Step three is, he understands it, but at the Rav's level. Okay? So, I didn't copy the rest, but let me share with you now the rest of how it all works. So we become Hashem's nation, the same thing happens. Hashem chooses Am Yisrael as his nation. He takes us out of Mitzrayim, right? To become his, to have a relation with him. But the infinite distance between Hashem and us is just infinite, right? We are a creation. We have a nefesh habamis, animal soul. We have an neshama that's okay, that's a bit hidden. So how do we even get on the bandwagon? How do we even begin this journey? Right? The only way to begin the journey, as we've talked about in different ways, is matzah. The way the Torah calls the yontif, chag matzahs. What's matzah? Total surrender. That's what matzah is, total bittul. Did I share with you the Vrat of the Maharal? Okay, but let me share with you because it's very relevant here. It's not brought in the Sikha, but it helps understand it, right? The Maharal asks a question like this. He says, the matzah, we know that the Seder, we do things, certain things we do to remember the freedom, certain things we do to remember the slavery, right? Like we eat murad, remember the slavery, we have charesis, remember the cement. Matzah is a symbol of freedom because of the Eden baked matzah when they left Mitzrayim, the whole thing, right? So the obvious question is, if matzah is something like wine, the Gemara says is like cheirus, you know? It should be good wine, and you feel cheirus, you drink wine, so on. It's like royalty, yeah? Shulchan Aruch says at the Seder table, you have nice dishes because that's royalty, like you should show. Free people, right? Good. Says Maral, how's matzah cheirus? Matzah is lechem oini, it's called the bread of affliction, it's called poor man's bread. Called the poor man's bread, which is the reason that on the Seder table we have a broken matzah. That's why we break the matzah. Why do we break the matzah? Because just the Gemara says, "Ma darkish l'oni," is like a way of a poor person. A poor person never has a complete loaf, so too, we break the matzah, right? So how's poverty a symbol of freedom? So the Maharal develops an amazing idea, which when I say it over, I like to call it positive poverty. What's positive? Poverty is a negative thing, right? Because he says that poverty is not, we're not talking about physical financial poverty here. Talk about poverty is that matzah is a symbol of ultimate freedom because you strip yourself of everything about you. You have nothing. You're left with nothing. Complete clean slate. Which is complete bittul, complete surrender. You give up self completely. Otherwise the connection with Hashem doesn't even begin. As long as there's a clean mole, as long as there's a full vessel, as long as the vessel still has something of me in it, I don't let Hashem in. That's why chametz is so strict. That's why chametz, even a drop of chametz is no good. Because as long as I have a drop of chametz, it's not me. It's not Hashem. So becoming something, in other words, I'm connecting to something completely new. Am Yisrael is becoming a nation, transitioning from being a nation of, or people of Gashmias, becoming Hashem's nation, which is an infinite nation. A nation that is a Torah nation. Torah is transcendent. A transcendent nation. Step one to do that is complete surrender. That's what the Maral says is positive poorness, in other words, positive poverty. I don't have anything left. I'm completely yours. Right? And I'll tell you something interesting, just another story, because I think it's, and you see this a little bit in I mean, this is our relationship with Hashem, and sometimes you see, you know, tzaddikim, it says, doim leboirim. Tzaddikim are similar to their creator. In other words, sometimes the way you connect with a tzaddik is the same process, right? You know, when the Rebbe became Rebbe, just a thought I had yesterday, I shared it last night with some people. When the Rebbe became Rebbe, so he took the chassidim like to a whole new level. I mean, the whole shlichus thing and everything, I was like, a whole, right? But it was a huge jump for people. I mean, people weren't used to this kind of thing. Pack up your bags, go in, all that kind of thing, right? And Bichal, he was very demanding. It was actually, we always talk about the Rebbe's love and tolerance and acceptance, but actually the Rebbe was extremely demanding, which people forget sometimes. Anyways, that's a separate story. But...
it's best not to write to him.
What?
If you get a reply,
then you're in trouble.
That's why it's best to write to him. That's how you grow. So I remember a conversation once with my father, a very interesting conversation. There was a famous Fabrengen when the Rebbe first became Rebbe, right? When Rebbe first became Rebbe, there was a handful, it was a few hundred Hasidim then in New York. There wasn't like, you know. My father was a Bocher. He came to New York to learn. He was from Israel. He came to learn in New York just before the previous Rebbe's first Yahrzeit. So he was there when the Rebbe officially accepted. You know, set up. He was there for 5 years. Like he was there like the foundational years of the Rebbe's leadership. So there was a famous Fabrengen which he would always repeat. I know about it, but he was always nice to hear from him when he was. Yeah. It was Tovshin Beis. It was 1952. The Rebbe had a Fabrengen which was Vorchim, and it was like very interesting Fabrengen. The Rebbe like spoke about all kinds of different things, and then the Rebbe asked Chassidim the craziest thing. He said to all the Chassidim, the Fabrengen, he wants them all to take their jackets off and turn them inside out, and take the hats and turn them upside down. And he himself, the Rebbe himself, took his hat and turned it upside down. Strange, like a chassidim being chassidim, whatever the Rebbe says, you listen. Right? So I can imagine the scene, right? It's a room full of people. I can only think about what it must be. As I see it, like a room full of people. It was a room about this size, more or less, in those days. Right? But it was packed. And people take off the inside out jackets, high hats upside down. Okay, and then the question, but that's how chassid is. The Rebbe says, maybe there's some spiritual thing. But I remember my father used to say this often because he remembers being there. Right? So I once said to him, what were you thinking? Just tell me, what did you think? Like, what did you... I mean, what thought crossed your mind? I mean, this is like bizarre stuff. So he told me, and maybe this is just his perspective, but I think it's a very true perspective. He said, the Rebbe was telling us, you want to be my chassidim? You asked me to become the Rebbe? You want me to take you on this journey? I need you to give yourself over completely. I need you to be ready to do anything. That's what his feeling was. And it's very much this idea. And by the way, and that's very much the theme of those early years. Now, we see the second part of the Rebbe very strongly. Right? Very, very strongly. That afterwards, we'll see why in a second. That the second part is, no, you have to also work yourself. And you have to, it mustn't be robots. But you've got to start off that way. You've got to start off total surrender. Nothing left of you. Then you can start understanding. You can start, and they'll encourage that later. They would often answer, why are you asking me everything? I need to tell you everything you need to do. Can't you work it out yourself? So you have those two sides, right? Why? Because if you really give yourself over, then you could understand yourself afterwards. Because the second step is, you can't remain by pure surrender. Why? Hashem doesn't want that. See, Hashem wants us, the us, to become connected to Him. In other words, that surrender must then guide and inspire the us in us. Understand? It's like a famous thing with Nasa V'Nishma, right? The Yidden said Nasa V'Nishma before Shavuos, Before Hashem gave us the Torah. What's Nasa? Total surrender. We'll just do whatever He tells us to do, we'll do. And they said Nasa before we understand. We'll do it even if we don't understand. Right? And Hashem praised us for that. And it says in the Gemara that when we said Nasa v'Nishma, the Gemara says when we said Nasa before Nishma was so great, to say Nasa before Nishma, that 600,000 Malachim came down and put two crowns on each Jew, one for Nasa, one for Nishma. So the question is, if Nasa is so amazing and so fantastic, why did Nishma fall altogether? Right? Just say Nasa, even better. I don't need to understand altogether. Right? The answer is no. You do need to understand, but only after Nasa. But the understanding is very important. That's why there were two crowns, one for Nasa, one for Nishma. Because Nishma is equally important, but only if it comes after Nasa. In other words, I want to understand, but I want to understand in the context of total surrender. But I need to understand because Hashem gave me a brain, and Hashem wants that brain. He doesn't want me to surrender in the context of disappearing. He wants me to surrender, and that should become who I am. But there has to be an I there. So to be an I have to understand. But in the context of surrender, I'm understanding what Hashem is teaching me. I'm not understanding what I want to understand. I'm understanding what you understand? I'll tell you a beautiful story. Maybe I've told you before. I don't know, maybe a little Fabrini here today. Maybe I'm telling stories and stuff. Okay, but it's an important, it's such a foundational concept, this, right? So my grandfather, my father's father, he lived in Eretz Yisrael. He was from Russia originally, but he was from Eretz Yisrael. So he was a very famous chassid. He was known as a masculine chassid. He was an extreme intellectual. And he was known as one of the leading teachers of chassidus because he has an unbelievably deep thinker in chassidus. Right? So he was a chassid of the Rebbe Rashab still, who was the previous Rebbe's father, right? He learned in the city of Lubavitch. Then he was a chassid of the previous Rebbe. Then in 1950, when the previous Rebbe passed away, he became a chassid of the Rebbe. He was much older than the Rebbe, right? But he became and he gave himself up. He was a real chassid, so he gave himself up. So he came to the Rebbe the first time in 1952. And he was there for quite a while. He was there for a few months. He was there for Purim. In those days, the Rebbe's Fabrengens were very small, and you could say something to the Rebbe. Later on, there was no talking. It was only the Rebbe spoke. But in those days, a chassid could ask a question. He could say something to the Rebbe. So it was Purim, and he was very emotional. It was the first time he'd seen the Rebbe, and so on. So he went over, and he asked the Rebbe a bracha. He said, I'm asking a bracha. I remember, again, he was a big intellectual, right? He said a bracha that he wants to believe properly. He said to the Rebbe, in Yiddish, he said, "Val fashtein, fashteit men garnisht." Because understanding, we don't understand anything. So just give me a bracha, I'll be able to believe properly. Now, let's talk from a person who understood a lot, right? He was a very deep in Yiddish. So the Rebbe's response was a very deep idea in Yiddish. I'll say in Yiddish, I'll translate. The Rebbe said to him, no. Fashtein darf men. Aber man darf nicht wollen fashtein. Which means, you have to understand, but you mustn't want or need to understand. Such a deep word. That was like this. We don't serve Hashem because we understand. We serve Hashem because matzah. We nothing. We gave ourselves over to Hashem and that's it. Nasa. Ask, what do we need Mishma for? Because Hashem wants us that surrender should become who we are. Which means there has to be a we. A we is how I understand, how I feel. It means serving Hashem with every part of who I am. So Hashem says, okay, now that you surrender, now go and understand in the context of that surrender. Obviously, your understanding is going to be different because you can understand, you'll know that you're trying to understand something that's beyond you. You're trying to understand something that's the absolute truth. And don't mix your own mises into it. Just try to understand it. Fine. But you have to understand it. And you have to ask questions. And you have to, right? Again, going back to some idea, you know, going back to this relationship between a chassid and a rebbe, right? Rav and Talmud, same sort of idea. So they started many, many, many years ago. They started in New York. These publications would come out. Publications would come out every week called Ha'aris. They still do it now. And originally it was put, the Easter, that it was from Bachram and Yeshiva, that every week they put a thing where Bachram used to learn, and would learn talks of the Rebbe. And they would ask questions. They would say, but hold on, the Rebbe says this, but in a different Gemara it says different, or what does it mean? We're trying to understand, right? Okay? So, you know, questions. And so the first published it, some older chassidim were very upset. So what's this new way? What's this? You ask questions of the Rebbe's sichas, you ask questions of the Rebbe's Torah, just learn, understand, and finish. And who was the one who disagreed with all them? The Rebbe himself. The Rebbe says, no, that's not the point. You have to ask questions. And he had such a preciousness to it. Like he used to sometimes talk about it with Fabrini. He would say someone asked a question and he would answer it. You could see sometimes the Rebbe would come down Friday night with these booklets that we put out for Shabbos and he would read it during Lachadoidi. And they were singing, he would have a glance at it. He loved it. Why? Because that's the point. The point is, The point is, you must totally surrender. But then, in the context of surrender, you have to be an understander. You have to grasp this. You have to become yours, right? Why? Says Rebbe, because there's a Chazal that tells us, "Ein l'chol ben chayir elash miyush batal b'tayir." A person is only considered truly free if he learns Torah. Why? If you don't start with matzah, then you're never free, because you're always trapped in yourself, right? But the matzah stage is also not true freedom, because the matzah stage is you just negated yourself, so you kicked yourself out. That's not true freedom either. True freedom is that the you is free. The you, there's a you, and the you is surrendered to Hashem. You've gone out of yourself completely and connected to Hashem. But who has gone out of yourself? Not, you haven't kicked yourself out. The you has surrendered. Is that the difference? That's true chayrus. That's the second name of Pesach. Zman chayrusim. The time of freedom. Because to be truly free, every part of you needs to be free. So the stage one is, as long as your egocentric self is still in the mix, then it doesn't help. So you've got to kick, so you got to surrender everything. Positive poverty. A complete empty vessel. Just receive the connection from Hashem. Nasa. Same idea. But then true freedom is that you have to bring the you back in. But the you back in the context of that surrender, that's true freedom. That the you is there and it's free. It's free to be beyond you. It's free to go out of you. It's free to be connected to Hashem. Right? But at that stage, there's a you, and the you is understanding. But because there's a you, the you is limited. So it dilutes the connection a little bit. Right? Like the Talmud. Like a Talmud who first surrendered just to hear what the Rav is saying, then tries to understand it or master it, but then inevitably, that's great. Even if he's trying to master it in the context of that surrender, but he's using his abilities, and therefore that's limited, and therefore it dilutes. Then the ultimate purpose is to come to the third level, which is the Talmud understands deeper and deeper and deeper until he's able, his you can grasp it at its pure set, at its pure level. Like the person understood after 40 years the Davar. What's that? That's Chag HaPesach. Because Chag HaPesach, Pesach means diluk, jumping. Jumping means that there's a you, but you're a totally different person. You're totally on a different level. You're on Hashem's level now. Which ultimately you have Mashiach comes, but that's the process. Right? And that's the three layers of freedom, that there's total surrender, that's Chag HaMatzis. There's bringing back the you in the context of that surrender, which is Chayruseinu. And then there's able to get to the Madrega, that it's still the you, but you're now at the Madrega of the one who you surrendered to without the you not being there. Like the Talmud who now with his own seichel can understand the way the Rav understood it. And that's the three levels of Pesach. Get it? Stop there. What's that?
Sort of. Maybe in
40 years. Now, the basic idea, no, so there's an extra detail in this, the Pesach part, but this basic idea, by the way, I'll just share this with you. This basic idea that this is a very, very big theme in all the Rebbe's talks, in many, many of the Rebbe's talks. This idea of total bittul, but then the bittul has to then come into the you as well, right? Because the Rebbe holds that's real bittul. In other words, you see, total surrender means that I've dissolved the you, I've dissolved the me, the I, right? Which means the I never really became bottle. It disappeared. Now, it's a necessary step because as long as the I is there in its original selfish form, there's no bittle whatsoever. That's why step one is always, that's every day we go through this. Every day there has to be this complete, understand, like, you know, even the way that Rebbe learns, even davening works like this. You know, that it's interesting that we say Moed Ani, right? We say Moed Ani in the morning. Moed Ani is surrender. That's what Rebbe explains. Hoido. But then we start to daven. Daven is about bringing the you back. We're trying to understand. We praise Hashem. We understand the greatness of Hashem. And then at the end of the Amidah, we say again, Moedim. Moedim, same word as Moedim. Why? Difference is because that's a surrender with the you. But you can't have a surrender with the you if you have a if the you wasn't kicked out first. First we have to understand how we're nothing. How the way we are as exist as independent beings, we're totally nothing. Total bittle. Total bittle means total bittle. There's no not half bittle, no, you know, like, not sort of bittle. Bittle means bittle. We're nothing, finished. We get the mindset that we don't exist and that's it. Our only existence, however, is to serve Hashem, but Hashem wants us to serve Him with our existence. And therefore, this theme of afterwards, sort of total surrender, but then introducing the you back into the surrender, that's a big theme of the Rebbe. That's also got to do with matzah and wine. Rebbe explains.
Is that kind of like knowing who you are and what you're good at, but knowing that it comes from the Rebbe?
Yeah, but you can only do that if you first negate you.
Yeah, that's the middle step.
Right. In other words, yes, that middle step is very, very important. That's really the main point. The main avoid is that the goal is that middle step. I mean, the ultimate madrig is the third step, but that's when Mashiach comes really, or mainly when Mashiach comes. But the ultimate is that right? That yeah, because Hashem did. He gave me a certain ability. He gave my brain a certain thing. He gave me a unique personality. He gave me a certain right. So I've got to serve Hashem with all of that because every part of me has Hashem. Right. And even in the very last maimer that the Rebbe gave out, the famous maimer called Atad Tzava, the similar idea. The Rebbe talks about the Mesiris Nefesh that comes from the Pintel Yid, right? And he talks about how the Mesiris Nefesh used to work in Russia. But over there it comes out like this, and in Russia it was different. It wasn't Mesiris Nefesh that can happen today in a way is greater. Not Chas Shalom to negate the Mesiris Nefesh of Russia, but he says over there, because that was when the Pintel Yid came out, so nothing else existed. In other words, when you're on the adrenaline of the soul, so when that Pintel Yid comes out, then my brains don't matter, my heart doesn't matter, nothing matters, right? And that's why only Hashem, that's it. So that's why they gave up their lives to give Torah Mitzvahs. So the Rebbe says the ultimate mysterious nefesh is that you do matter. You're getting up in the morning and you haven't negated. In other words, your brain is back and your emotions are back and you still have mysterious nefesh. That's the ultimate mysterious. Same idea, really, right? So we call it chassidus koichas agluim, your conscious faculties, right? So surrender comes from a very deep part of the neshama, but then the second part is that very deep neshama, that deep level of the neshama should then guide and inspire and drive the more conscious parts of who we are. Because the conscious parts of who we are important. Because Hashem gave it to us, and He wants us to serve Him with those conscious parts. But it can only happen if we first go through the process. But that's why bittul is such an important part of learning chassidus, the idea of bittul. Not a popular concept in society today, but right, they're not into negating the me. But chassidus, that's what chassidus is. That everyone said like this, you know, that it goes like this, right? There's a chazal, there's a saying in chazal that has two, you know, sometimes in Gemara, something has two versions, right? Because, you know, it was all oral, so sometimes I have two versions. So there's one sentence that says, Ani nivresi l'sham mishas koini. I was created to serve my master. The person knows, why was I created to serve Hashem? Right? There's another version of that same sentence that says it a bit different. The way the sentence in the Torah talks, ani lo nivresi elo l'sham mishas koini. I wasn't created only to serve my master. I was only created to serve my master, but the way it's written is I wasn't created. The way the Gemara, that's a language in Gemara. Loi ella, not but only for. It's not this, but only for that. What's the difference between these two versions? When the person says, I was created to serve Hashem, it means like this. I was created, I exist. Okay, the purpose of my existence is to serve Hashem. That's one level of bittul. He says, no, but that's not the real level. Real level of bittul means, person says, "Ani lo nivresi. I wasn't created. I don't exist altogether. Ella, my entire existence is l'sham mishas koini. Understand? It's like the difference between I have a hand. Now I realize that my hand has to do mitzvah, so I light Shabbos candles. That's one way to look at it. Or no, there's no hand. The whole purpose of the hand is to light Shabbos candles. Understand? You only get to that if you have total bittul, the matzah bittul first. I mean, it's obviously easier to talk about than to say, but then to feel this way. But I'm saying,
to do it like that.
I was saying to some people last night. I was just giving all this idea. I said, "How do we implement it? Like, what does that mean actually? Right? What is that like? I mean, first of all, we have to develop that mindset at least. The mindset at least gives us a perspective, and it does inspire certain things of how we do, right? It inspires the way we live a little bit. But also just practical, what does it mean? So it means, look, it means sometimes when it comes Pesach, you know how we grow, right? We talk about Pesach's growth. But sometimes real bittle means that we have to take something. We often grow, but we grow in areas that we like anyway. Like, you know, a person likes to learn, so they learn more. A person likes to do a particular mitzvah, so they do more of that mitzvah. Right? It's a very good thing. It's beautiful, not to be negated, right? But sometimes real growth means real bittle. In other words, where does that real bittle express itself? That we have to sometimes, doesn't have to be a big thing, it could be a small thing, but it's a push. In other words, something that we taka mamish don't like. If it doesn't make sense to us, it doesn't make any sense, it doesn't talk to us, it makes us, gets on our nerves, it's uncomfortable. Whatever the case is, right? So every person, it's something else in Yiddishkeit. We all have our areas in Yiddishkeit that doesn't gel with us. And Daf could do that. That's going out of Mitzrayim. All right, we'll leave it there. Have a kosher fiddle on Pesach, everyone.